Hiya, it's Lydia here. Before we get into this episode, I'm going to do a little bit of a setup. The weird years are, by their nature, full of unexpected shifts, changing relationships, changing jobs. Something might happen which throws you off course. We know about the external change, but what I think we're not really talking about enough of is those unexpected internal changes that happen off the back of the external ones. Sometimes when you have a big external change, you'll realize that so much of your concept of self and how you thought about yourself was actually wrapped up in this thing that maybe wasn't really in your control anyway. And suddenly you're looking around and you're like, oh, I don't actually know who I am now that this big external thing has changed. And that's what happened to today's guest, Ryan. I'd been following Ryan for a while on social media. He does these really nice videos, and they're often kind of truth bombs or thoughts about society, thoughts about yourself, like revelations. They always feel honestly very weird years coded. They're very much in the, what are we doing? We're trying to work it out. Let's look out for each other. This kind of nice mishmash of a lot of the things that we're thinking and feeling at the moment. For 10 years, he ran a successful clothing company with his sisters. And it was so important and he was so wrapped up in it. When it came to his work, it was part of his identity. It was where he found a real source of pride, I guess, and a source of purpose, and also probably a source of validation. And when that shut down, it wasn't just a financial loss that was left. It was this big kind of hole in how he saw himself. It was a bit of an existential hole that was left. This conversation is about identity and it's about failure. And for anyone listening and not watching, failure is heavily put in quotation marks for this. It's about the crash and what happens after and how your identity changes and your sense of self. But it's also about rebuilding and not in that kind of flashy overnight success story kind of way. It's really about rebuilding with a new appreciation of, I guess, what matters. Thinking about community, thinking about how you spend your time, thinking about how you perceive yourself, and in his case, how he thinks about masculinity as well. What this really is a meeting of two minds and a meandering conversation, and honestly, just chewing the fat on lots of different topics, which went from one to another, and I really hope you'll enjoy it. If you're grieving a version of yourself or a version of your life that didn't pan out in a certain way, or perhaps it just doesn't fit anymore, or maybe you're sitting in the space between the person that you were and the person that you're becoming, I think this episode really holds a mirror up to that. So let's get into it. If life feels like a whirlwind of clarity and confusion, pull up a chair. Welcome to The Weird Years. Well, Ryan, welcome to the beige couch.
Thanks for having me on the beige couch.
You've brought some colour to the beige couch.
Yeah, contrast is important.
Yes, we were talking about this. It's very important to have contrast on the couch because it is beige, the wall is beige, sometimes the light in here is beige.
Yeah.
It can get quite beige in here.
I chose my skin colour as well for extra contrast.
Thank you, we appreciate that.
That's okay.
There's so much that we could talk about.
Yeah.
But I really wanted to have you on because I stumbled across some of your Instagram videos. They're kind of good.
They could do with some work.
No, you've had some virality, some might say.
Yeah, that sounds a bit like an STI.
Well, don't leave that on the couch.
I will not leave that on the couch.
Tell us who you are, for those who do not know. What do you do? What's your name? What's your name? Ooh. Age, sex, location?
Ooh, ASL. ASL. That jippy, playing snooker against 15-year-old. Not that that was going to be a weird place. Ryan Old Haynes, originally from Coventry. Mm-hmm. 36 years old. 37, soon.
Oh, congrats.
Maybe when this episode comes out, I'll be 37. I don't know. Had a clothing brand with my sisters for 10 years. Mm. And we closed it down at the end of last year. So now I'm like in my phase of, what the hell do I do? Who the hell am I?
That was actually like a big clothing brand. I didn't realise that when I found your Instagram. And then I like went through and did a full stalk. And I was like, Elsie and Fred was legit.
Thanks.
Yeah, like a real thing. I'd heard of it.
That was my life for a while.
Yeah.
That was going to be my life forever.
What happened?
COVID, Brexit, cost of living, Shein, Temu, TikTok shop,
fuck,
algorithms.
Yeah.
Take your pick.
Right.
And throw them all in together. And then because it was me and my sisters in it together, I think we got to a point where I was like, I could carry on doing this if I knew the economic world was going to get better.
Mm.
And I think we got to a point where we just said, I've got nothing left in the tank emotionally.
Yeah.
So let's pause it for a bit. / stop it.
But was that like your baby? Was that your, were you like, this is the reason I'm doing stuff?
Yeah, man. That was, I attached my whole personality to that company for 10 years. And then as it declined, I really struggled to separate myself, and it failed because I failed as a human being, and I wasn't strong enough to be in that unicorn group of like, you made it, because we're so close to actually doing that. But then people would say it was doing anything for 10 years is a success, I suppose. I struggle to say the word success.
Success. So was that your first business then?
Yeah. My sister opened a shop in Coventry like 2006,
yeah.
Did really well for 6-7 years. And then we opened up like Alcina Fred as like a side thing because it was more online, and that was all in person bricks and mortar.
Mm.
And we were going to Thailand to get vintage and bring that back. And she was like, oh, we could do some men's stuff as well. So we started out vintage and went on ASOS Marketplace, and it's like early Depop, early vintage.
Yeah.
And it was when Instagram was first around and influencers actually like could really influence. So if we got something on someone, I remember a couple of people, we sent like these tops, we used to customize to them, and they just went like viral back then. And it started from there. And then we met Jenna from Gypsy Shrine, who now owns ReFi.
Mm-hmm.
We met her at Glastonbury, and she was like, she was going into the Love Island villa to do a glitter party. She's like, oh, can I have some of your shorts to give to the girls? And we did that, and then she wore them, and then it just went mental from there. So we went from making stuff in Thailand to then having to go to China, and the demand on it became mad. And we're like, oh, this is like a real business. And then that was it for 2-3 years. Had like 14, 15 staff. We were in Topshop on Oxford Street.
Wow.
Urban Outfitters, ASOS. And then, yeah, 2020 came. And that was like, because it was so like, it was going out gear. It was like bright rave festivals. And everyone says, oh, I'm not allowed to go out. So obviously they stopped wearing Alcina Fred.
And you've closed it down now?
For now. It's on an extended break until we decide what to do with it.
Mm.
I don't know.
What have you been doing since then?
Trying to find out who I am as a human being. Outside of work, I suppose.
Is that it? Is it like, because you said you made it like your whole identity, like Alcina Fred was you. And what, when it's closed down, you're just like, I don't know who I am.
Yeah, I think I attached a lot of my worth as a human being to that company. If I couldn't bring that to, especially in relationships, I attached a lot of who I was to what I could bring to the table. And it was a successful company, because you have conversations with people when it was successful, like, oh, I own a clothing brand, and then it's called Alcina Fred. And they're like, oh, I know that. And it's like, oh, I wore that at festival last year. And that just gave a lot of validation and a lot of fake validation, I suppose, that wasn't real. It was lovely. And we really enjoyed the message we promoted with the brand, because it was always about like anxiety and sex and drugs. We wanted to talk about all the things that came with festivals. So it's quite important to us to like have those conversations. So the message around that was really important to us, but the vanity metrics were empty.
So you do that and you're like, okay, this is going really well. And then it starts to close down. You're sort of working out who you are. Was it like an immediate realization? Did you realize how much of your identity you'd put attached to this company? Or was it like you don't even notice that until it's not there?
I think I just didn't notice until I was wildly sad, got quite depressed, really anxious. Got really low, really, really low, to a point where, yeah, I wanted out, like, seriously. I moved back to my hometown, moved in with some mates, and I was like, this is pretty much, and nothing like, they're my brothers, like, they are my best friends in the world, but I was living in somebody else's third bedroom in my hometown after having a successful company for 10 years. I was like, what is happening?
Yeah.
And yeah, so I was like, how do I get out of this slog that I'm in? And it got worse and it got better, and it, you know. And then I was like, how do we move on from here? And that's when I was like, you know what? I've got to fucking do something. That's when I started like Time to Find Purpose, which was coming out the depths of my despair in terms of, okay, what makes me happy outside of work and get my personality back.
Yeah, tell us about Time to Find Purpose.
It just started out as a little project of just like, I want to talk to people, men especially, about what's going on in their heads. Mm. Because I didn't want to be here anymore. And I was like, if I've been there and I could come back from that, then I'd love to talk to the people that do go over the line and take their own lives and come close to it. And I'm like, if I could, I don't claim to be anything, but I'm honest about my thoughts and feelings. And if I'm honest and vulnerable, I find that people want to talk to me about their feelings and it becomes a bit more of a safe space, I suppose.
Mm.
Like you were saying earlier, you attract.
I attract people who want to trauma dump on me. And I love it. I encourage it actively. But no, I mean, I think lots of people will relate to this idea of something can become your whole life so easily, like whether it's a relationship, you know, you're in a relationship, especially at our age now. It's like a lot of things we've probably done for a fair amount of time. Like maybe you've had a career for 10 years, maybe you've had a relationship for that amount of time. And it can be so hard to unpick you. Like I remember when I left my startup that I used to work for, I wasn't like a founder, but I was in the founding team. Like, yeah. I was the first team. There was like six of us when I joined. And honestly, like it was my whole identity. Like I posted about it all over Instagram. I started a YouTube channel. Like, please, people don't go and look at them.
Exactly. What is it?
Let's see. No, it's so embarrassing. I think it's called Lidsy. But I went through this whole thing of being like, what it's like to work in a startup. And I used to do tours. Every time we moved office, I would do like a tour and be like, this is our new office. Like, we're growing.
What was the company?
The company was a like video startup. So we made short form content for brands, but we did it through like a network of people.
Oh, nice. Like,
network
like early agency.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, before like loads of short form was even a thing. Like, yeah.
It's still going now.
Still going, yeah. Killing it.
But you're not allowed to say.
But, they're still doing very well. But when I fell out of love with the company, it was like, yeah, I built my whole like view of the world around that business. And I really was like, oh, I don't even know who I am. Whenever I'd meet people, I'd be like, hi, Lydia, I work in a startup. I'm like, I was watching that TV show, Silicon Valley, it's called.
Yeah.
Loved it. I was like watching Dragon's Den. And I was like, that's me.
This is me now.
I made it my whole personality. And I was like, I'm an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Basically.
You're like a week away from having Forex Trader in your
Instagram bio. Oh, I would have been ripe for the picking. Yeah. If someone had come in and been like, you can be a Forex Trader and you'll earn commission, I'd have been like, yeah, 100%. Yeah. I was in crypto. Of course I was. That's what we were all doing. We were in startups. Of course I was in crypto. Didn't put enough in though. Bloody wish I had. If I put enough in 2016, I wouldn't be sat here, I'll tell you.
Yeah, I sold mine when I needed money. I think I sold it for less than I bought it for.
Fuck.
Rest in peace.
Yeah, that is really sad. But to come back with this story, this very long-winded story of mine, is that I think lots of people will feel that suddenly you're like, everything's going great. And then there's one small change and it's wild how much it impacts your identity and your view of self.
Yeah.
What did you do after that?
Time to find purpose. So the premise is that I do something out of my comfort zone whilst interviewing somebody. Because I was like, I could do vlogcasts and podcasts or something, but I think it would have been more impactful in my head to do something that is a bit funny as well. Because I like a bit of comedy. I like serious topics mixed with comedy. So the first one, my mates like love golf. And I started a run club in Coventry just because like when I went back home, I was like, all my mates are fucking playing golf all the time. This is boring. So I need something outside of this. So I started running. Started a run group. And then one of my good pals plays golf and he loves it. So I was just like, do you know what? Your dad's dead. My mom's dead. Let's have a chat whilst playing golf. Sounds funny with a bit of serious in there. And the first episode went really well. And I was like, oh, okay, this is it. Like, now I just have to do uncomfortable or things outside of my comfort zone whilst having serious conversations. So the second one was my mate's a choir singer. We had a chat. He taught me how to sing. Not choir singer. That's wildly wrong. He's an opera singer. Yeah.
And he has the lowest voice I've ever heard in my life.
It's so sexy.
I didn't even know that was possible.
Yeah. He's a wonderful character.
Yeah.
Strange man. Wonderful guy. Yeah, so he taught me how to sing. And then we chatted about male violence towards women. Third one, I didn't actually release the serious topic, but my friend taught me to dance. And then we had a conversation around where does masculinity sit within female space, feminine heavy spaces, because I had a clothing brand and he's a dancer, but he's cis and hetero. So he sits in a lot of spaces where a lot of the men are gay or he's surrounded by a lot of women.
Yeah.
So it was like trying to work out where your masculinity sits within those spaces.
Yeah.
But it came at a time when the news about Gisele Pellico came out. So I was just like, we don't need men saying anything about, maybe there's some conversations about where we sit in these spaces, because no one needs men on having more voices about these things in this current time, you know?
Well, at that point, yeah.
At that point.
I mean, I'm a big advocate of get men in the conversation, because sometimes it feels like with those conversations, this is a bit of a tangent, but it feels sometimes as women, you're just shouting to each other, being like, help us, help, help. We need the men to stop doing things.
Yeah, and then men are like, lazy.
Yeah.
Like, especially when it comes to those conversations. I don't know if it's fear, but even if you say anything on Instagram or you have good conversations on Instagram or TikTok, it's women supporting it and saying, this is a conversation we need to have.
Yeah.
It's not men saying it.
No.
Any men that come in are like, yeah, but what about men? Make your own video, bruv. I'm so sorry, I just smacked the microphone.
I wish they would make more videos. But that's what I like about yours. It's like you're trying to find your purpose, right? But you're also tackling those deep existential questions whilst trying out fun things, opera, dancing.
Yeah. Then I'm going to run out of fun things or things out of my comfort zone. So if
there's
anyone
so many
knows,
fun things to do. So. Actually, tell me, why is purpose so important? Why have you got this little bee in your bonnet?
I'm not sure it is. Like I said, it was a year ago. And I think, if I'm being completely honest, it was a very selfish pursuit. And I'm trying to become less self-absorbed and less selfish. And I think purpose is just like more me stuff.
Do you think?
Yeah. To some degree, in my story. I believe servitude is where we could find purpose. I have found purpose a few times. First time was that I started the company. Second time was at my run club. Third time was at this new thing I'm doing with this company called Drop Dead Generous, who are basically just funding kind ideas.
That's really cool.
It's so cool.
Yeah.
So they give $500 away for acts of kindness. And I'm like, this is it. This is what we need to do. We need to spread kindness. And I think the more I try and give and help other people, the more I find, like, selfishly, more purpose for myself.
Interestingly, I looked up some of the data around, like, purpose and work, because that's often, I think, where you hear the term purpose is, like, it's like, I want a purposeful job and I want my work to be purpose. And, like, you know, I get it because you spend a lot of time there. But a 2023 study found that only 10% of UK workers are engaged in their work. So they actually feel...
10%?
10%. Feel like mentally engaged and like they have a purpose in their work.
Well, that's nonsense, isn't it?
Yeah, it's bizarre. And then I looked at the flip side. So I was like, okay, well, how many people think their work isn't meaningful? And it was a third of like your average worker. One third of them think their work is completely meaningless. But when you go into different sectors, this is what was really interesting. It was a third in private sectors. And then when you got into public sectors, so, you know, you're nurses and that kind of stuff. When you go into public sector, the amount of people who think it's meaningless drops to 17%.
Yeah, makes
sense. Then when you go into not-for-profit, it drops to 11%. So what you were saying of that it's about servitude actually really backs up in the data. It's like those people who are closer and closer to helping people, they actually find more purpose in their lives.
It makes sense, right? It's what the religious folk have been saying for all this time, isn't it?
I know, it is.
I might convert to something.
Yeah.
Not sure what yet, but...
But do you think that's a thing, though, that we're focusing in the wrong place? We're thinking about purpose in relation to our work and our jobs?
I think we're all selfish. Mm. I think the world is... and I've been selfish for the longest time. So I'm definitely including myself in that pool of people. But everyone wants to know how they can benefit from things. But I think... the joy is found truly in if you help enough people get what they want, I think you'll get what you want.
That's interesting.
I believe so. I think that if we spread kindness like it is a virus, I think we can do things in the world that we couldn't imagine. Everything is about me. Power grabs. You walk around Canary Wharf around here. Why are we championing pop-up grey silver buildings, suits, black... What are we doing? What are we doing? For what? So you can earn 70, 30, 80, 90,000, 100,000 to what? To go and put back in the house that you're going to pay off for the rest of your life, or to then go and chill out. You heard the story about the fisherman and the American guy?
Yes. Tell it though, because it's so good.
I'm going to butcher it.
It's a classic.
But it's like the classic of like, I don't know, a poor fisherman, in inverted commas, is sitting there fishing and a big American guy comes up to him. I don't know why he's big. He's like the classic American guy.
He's like, what hey, you dude, doing, what, fisherman?
Yeah. He's like, do you know, if you, you know, got a boat, you could fish more. And he's like, oh, I'm okay. And if you get three boats, you could harvest all that, blah, blah, and then you could sell all of, I'm absolutely butchering it, but you can, then you can sell the boats and the company to then do what? And he's like, to sit on the beach and retire, like the man is just fishing for his family and his own needs.
Mm.
Why do we just commodify everything for no apparent reason?
Yeah.
I don't know what the answer is, Lydia. Other than,
well, don't look at me. I've got no, I mean, that's the whole point of this podcast. I have zero answers. Just
how questions. Do you feel about purpose?
I mean, I think that's always been my thing with it, is that I truly drank the Kool-Aid. Like, I was like, my startup was my purpose. Like, this is what I'm doing and this is what I care about. And then when I left that and had like the summer of misery, actually, this was before the summer of misery. It must have been the first time.
Have you already spoke about the summer of misery? Because I feel like glossing over the summer of misery sounds a bit like simplistic. It's quite a dark time.
Yeah, I need to think about the timing. Let me... So yeah, when I left the startup, then I just had a period of like complete lostness.
Mm-hmm.
It was confusion and being like, I actually don't know who I am without it. And I realized that it's because I had internalized this view of like, okay, your purpose is your work. And actually it's because I had drunk the Kool-Aid of things like startups. And, you know, you see people standing on a stage and they're like, and this is why this matters so much. And this is what we're going to do to the world. And you're like, oh God, that's so good, because they have their purpose, but also they're making millions.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the association I think that we always see, is that it's okay to have purpose when your purpose comes with a ginormous, like, big house and a nice car. I think when people say something like, oh, my purpose is my kids, or my purpose is like, I just like to get up every day and walk my dog, and like that is my purpose, is taking care of my dog and helping the people who I help when I work at the post office. There's like this kind of snobbiness around purpose. Like your purpose should be lofty and giant and impactful, and it should, and crucially, it should be financially putting you in an amazing place.
Absolutely. Because the when it becomes kids and dog, it's like, oh, you've given up on life.
Exactly.
And that's what I thought it was for so long. Jim Carrey said, didn't he? He said, I wish everyone can get rich and famous to realise they just don't need that.
Yep.
And I think that is number one. I saw, again, Jordan Stevens the other day, great guy, by the way. He said that the more work he does and the more he works on himself, the less ambitious he becomes.
Yeah.
I was like, that's fucking cool, man.
I was talking...
If everyone felt like that, we might have been in trouble, but...
Yeah, that's true. We do need some people. So if you're listening to this and you've got some big ideas, keep doing it.
Keep on your grind.
But no, I think that's the thing, is that we have turned purpose into like a capitalist stick to whack ourselves on the back with. And it's like, it's not enough. And this was the thing that I had to go through, is that I attached my whole identity was this startup and that was my purpose. And then I had to go through this work of like, okay, well, like, I have to find my next purpose. Mm-hmm. Like, I have to find the thing. And I was trying all this stuff and being like, oh, I don't know what it is. And then I started working freelance and I was like, okay, maybe my purpose is just to have, like, to travel more.
Yeah.
And I was like, how does that feel? That feels kind of good. And then I was like, maybe actually that is my purpose, is to travel more and spend more time with the people that I love. How can I do that if I earn more money? Okay, but I need to earn more money without the trap of not being able to see my family, right? Yeah. So I was like, really?
You need all the holidays.
And then I was like, but what if I just saw my job as just money?
Ooh.
And I was like, how would that feel if I literally was like, what's the thing I can do for the minimum amount of time to make the most amount of money? And that's sort of where I landed for a really long time.
Yeah. So you became a DJ.
So I became a DJ. So I became an OnlyFans model. No, no one paid for that. But yeah, and so that's kind of where I got to, was like, oh, maybe your work actually can just be your work, and it doesn't have to be your identity and your purpose and everything.
How old were you when you were in your startup?
I left when I was 28.
Okay.
Yeah. How do you feel about that? The idea that can your work just be for finance? Can it literally be a clock on and a clock off?
Absolutely. I think if you're listening to your own body and your own life, I think... If you're listening to your body and your mind, I think everything can be just something. Makes no sense, right? But What I mean is, if you are conscious of the things going on, then if you clock in at 9 and clock out at 5, sound. But if you just become this unconscious loop of, why am I earning £100,000? I don't even know anymore. This is just what I do. I spoke to somebody the other day. They said they're caught in this cycle and they can't get out, and they are earning a lot of money, but they don't enjoy it. So what is it for? What's the end goal? And I don't think a lot of people know. And I don't know. I don't know the answer to the question.
Yeah.
But I think people say generally, I don't know who it was. I think it's Tony Robbins. I think there's like an upper bracket of £60,000. And after that, you don't really get, you don't tend to find anyone gets any happier.
Yeah.
I'd love to see, like, £60,000 a year with a little yacht.
Just a small yacht.
Just a little yacht.
Is that too much to ask?
Yeah. So I feel like yachts are just an obscene, that's oligarch stuff.
Yeah.
I don't foresee.
There's plenty of those around here.
Oh, there is.
Some good yachts. But that's a really good point. Yeah, I remember I actually did that in my degree. We talked about that there is a drop off where money doesn't, like, money does correlate with happiness up to a certain amount. I think when I was studying, it was about 90,000.
Decent.
Yeah. And then after that, it drops off, because I think that's the point where you get into the cycle of you are then working. Well, firstly, you've raised your living standard, right?
Yeah.
And we live in an economy and a society where everything is rented. 80% of cars are on finance. Did you know that?
What?
80% of cars are on finance.
They're I need that owned. Fact check, Liz.
You can fact check it. I looked it up when I bought my car, because I was like, I'm going to buy the car. So we have cars on lease. We have our homes that we're renting. We rent so many things in our lives. You can even now, you know, pay later, buy now, pay later for your clothing. So people get in this cycle of like, I'm earning more, but I'm spending more. And then inherently it's like, okay, well, I'm going to work even more. And then they start to realize that they're losing time with the people they love.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where, coming back to purpose and what you were saying of the, you know, the fisherman and yourself spending time with people, I do think that more of us, if we really look deep, that might be the only thing it's about.
Yeah, I think so. Everyone goes on the weekends, they go away and they're like, oh my God, this is it.
Yeah.
They go to the woods and plug into nature and they're like, oh, this is what I need. And then we go back and you get caught in the cycle, didn't you?
It's interesting that you talk about nature, because one of my favourite books is called Lost Connections by Johan Hari. And
sounds
it's
sexy.
A kind of modern breakdown of reasons of depression. And he basically propones this idea that we've bought into this biological cause of depression. And there is an aspect of that. But he said that actually being depressed in the society that we live in makes complete sense. And he breaks down these, I think, yeah, it's 9 different points. And one of them is disconnection from nature.
Mm-hmm.
But 3 of them relate back to purpose. So one of them's around a disconnection from meaningful work. So yep. Work that you feel actually does something and matters in some way. Another is a disconnection from other people. So we're sitting, you know, alone in our houses, staring at a screen all day.
Yeah.
Not connected.
And everyone thinks they want that, which they don't.
Exactly. And disconnected from meaningful values, which I thought was really interesting. So he talks about real values versus junk values. And real values are your things like, you know, caring for people, being reliable and looking after others, versus, or more like, you're holding your own moral standards. And junk values is basically like praying to the gods of consumerism.
Okay, yeah.
And lots of people have misaligned those things. And I was thinking about all those things and I was like, well, yeah, if we're not hitting all of those, it's unsurprising that we don't feel like we have a purpose. And therefore, a lot of people, especially our age, are depressed.
Mm-hmm. And we are the nation of doing the work, right?
Yeah.
And I think we've lost the second half of what it means to do the work, which is, how do we activate this in society and be better people? Because we're like, self-help, self-help, self-help. And it's like, the self-help is to then go and use that in society, right? To go and help other people. But we've just consumed the first half of all of that.
Do you know, I've actually never put that together in that way. Yes. Like, literally until you've just said that.
We've got to do more of that.
Yeah, it's like, who are you doing the work for?
Who are we doing it for?
It's for society.
To become better, well-rounded human beings, not to go and manifest earning loads more money, or manifest, you know, going to Ibiza to become an embodiment coach. Mm. No shade. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. You're not wrong. You're definitely not wrong.
No, I have faith in the bigger picture, and I don't know what the bigger picture is. But the plan is to, I want to help I want conversations with men. Mm-hmm. I want to facilitate male spaces where we have conversations about what's going on and how we can be better human beings for each other, firstly, mm-hmm. and how we raise our young boys to become better human beings. Because there's a thing, like, you don't raise boys that aren't your own, right? Because it's weird. Like, you know, third spaces, a lot of buzzwords about third spaces and youth clubs, etc. Unless you have a boy, it's kind of weird to give a pep talk unless you're a school teacher. There's no spaces for you to learn from other men that are bigger than you. So I'd like to, I don't know what it looks like yet, but I'd like to facilitate spaces where we're talking to 11-year-old lads, 12-year-old lads, young boys that are in the crucial time of their lives, where they need older men to say, that's not how you do it, bruv. Don't do that. Don't be a dick. Teach them some discipline so they can be better human beings. I hate branding whole generations of people. It's nonsense. But if we continue to game and not get out and play sports and not do combat sports and learn discipline as young men, I think we're all fucked. Mm. And that perpetuates, and then that becomes worse for women. Because I think women did all the work in COVID and men were like, game, without doing any work. And they're like, oh, what about us? We've been left behind. Because no one taught them to be better human beings.
Why do you think the default is that, like, why do you think women lean into doing the work more? Or do they?
Because by default, I guess women are more nurturing mm-hmm. characters. Nurturing of self, nurturing of friends, nurturing of groups. And men aren't. Go in any men's WhatsApp group, you'll see one message and then another message a week later, maybe. Just saying, oh, that's cool. Women are like, oh my God, tell me everything. I'm celebrating your wins. Men are pathetic in that capacity.
Right.
And it has to change. I try and call my mates out as much as possible for, we do this thing called Wednesday Waffle.
I love Wednesday Waffle.
Yeah, the Australian guy came from the Australian guys, and they're all like championing each other.
Yeah, it's one of my guy friends actually who brought into our group.
Really?
Yeah.
That's excellent.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to get them all to do that every Wednesday, and it's hard.
Wait, tell people what Wednesday Waffle is, because
so
I'm obsessed with
boys are rubbish at like checking in with each other. We meet up at the pub, unless you're playing football, unless you're doing some kind of activity together, and it normally revolves around drinking, right? So it's a thing where you hold each other accountable for, you know, checking in with each other on a Wednesday with a video in your WhatsApp group and just say everything that's happening that week. What's going on with your wife? What's going on with your kids? What's going on with your family? What's going on in job, work? Wonderful. It's just a lovely thing to do. And I'm like, I know more about my mates because of that than I have done for the last few years. And it's like, oh, I feel close to them again. I feel connected to them. But that takes a lot of work to get that momentum going. And somebody has to take the lead. And sometimes you feel like a bit of a nause for like, you've done your Wednesday waffle.
Yeah.
But some people just need a kick up the arse.
I think people do need a kick up the arse because, like, you know, it's that classic joke of your partner goes out for like dinner with the boys. No, probably not going for dinner. Whatever they're doing with the boys. Yeah. They're going for a few drinks with the boys or watching something or whatever. And you come back and you're like, oh, how's Tom? How's he getting on with the baby? Well, I didn't ask.
Don't know.
I'm like, what do you mean?
100%.
Well, I didn't ask. Yeah, but are they finding it hard? Are they sleeping okay? Well, I don't know. I didn't ask. And you're like, how? And I just, sometimes I'd love to be a fly on the wall in these conversations because I just think, what the fuck are you talking about if you're not talking about that?
I've got no idea. I guess it becomes very present conversations. Present conversations sounds like it's really forward leaning. It's not. Yeah, I've got no idea. I actually don't know. I thought about trying to take the Wednesday waffle into IRL mm-hmm. and say, what's going on with you? Like, take the time to say, tell us your Wednesday waffle live. So you just have like 3 minutes to talk. But that feels very regimented. I'm not sure that'll work.
Yeah.
I mean,
see, as a woman, I'm not going to lie, this sounds fucking bizarre to me.
Yeah.
But like, because I'm just thinking, like, I met one of my girlfriends on Monday for dinner and like everything. She's trained to be a dog trainer. How's that going? How's the house renovation going? We've just gone to see a house. Where are you thinking of living? How was your trip to New York? Yeah. Everything. So it's just, yeah, it sounds crazy, but so that's what you're going to focus on now is you're going to facilitate these conversations.
Hopefully. Not hopefully, I am.
You are, yeah.
Yeah. And I want to lean into conversations that don't share my values and don't share my opinions because I think that's important. we can polarize ourselves quite easily with left wing, right wing, veganism,
mm-hmm.
carnivore, et cetera, et cetera. And we don't have the conversations where we say, do you know what? Two things can be true at once. We can have balanced conversations. We can disagree with each other and still go for a beer afterwards. Wouldn't that be lovely?
Does this worry you when we talked about that, you know, purpose is lovely and that's a great thing,
mm.
but we also have lives that we have to live in. Do you worry about how your purpose will balance out financially, or are you like, I'm not even going to think about that. I'm just putting it to the back of my mind.
Do I really like that? I mean, I assume a brand's going to come across and just say, Ryan, go do your thing. I'll sponsor it.
Yeah, we'll pay for it and you go and have all these conversations.
Yeah, that's what happens, right?
Oh, I bloody hope so.
Is that naive?
Yeah, no. No.
Where are you at with your purpose and your...
Do you know what's funny is that, and this is a little bit of people who have a mental breakdown always become a life coach, is I think that that is the cycle. It's like you've got this thing, you think everything's great, you lose it, you lose your purpose, you don't know where you're going. Then you do all the work and you find out, oh, actually that all those values and the thing I thought it was, it's not that, it's actually people. And then you go, how can I help people? And then you become a life coach.
Yeah. So that's where you're at.
I'm not going to become a life coach, but that is the podcast, right? It's like, how can I help people? That is my purpose. Like I say that what we're doing here is we're normalizing the discussion of meltdown inducing questions that hit in great. Your 20s and 30s. Yeah.
Is that the tagline?
That's what I wanted to
that's
do.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Say it again.
To normalize the meltdown inducing questions that happen in your late 20s and 30s.
That's really good. Yeah.
Get talking about it. I think that, yeah, that's really interesting. If when people think about purposes, it does come back to people. And I actually asked this out to listeners of the podcast because I was like, I want to know what other people feel about this. Sometimes you think to yourself, in you know Maslow's hierarchy of needs, this actualization of having a purpose feels really like self-validating and a bit kind of flagellating in itself.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask other people, and it was so interesting what came back because it's all about helping others. Like one, this is a man who wrote in,
ooh.
But he didn't send a letter.
Pen and paper?
No, he replied to my Instagram.
To whom this may concern?
He said, I used to be a primary school teacher. I thought it gave me a sense of purpose, but it became overshadowed by bureaucracy. Then I became a counsellor and working in private practice gives me a sense of purpose because I'm helping people who've been where I've been, depressed, anxious, and helping those people gives me a huge sense of purpose and joy. I'm like, that's the cycle, isn't it?
That is the cycle. You've literally just said that as well. And that's struggled, thought they were doing well, struggled, lost it all.
Yeah.
Work on yourself, give back.
Yeah.
Don't you think it's embarrassing how easy to read we are as human beings?
I know. And also how we are just all like the archetypes of the same story.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking about, you know, purpose is so, it's so romanticized. It's like Into the Wild. One of my favorite books.
Yeah.
Film, also good. But Into the Wild is
he's cancelled though, isn't he?
Who?
Into the Wild actor.
Oh, I don't know.
I think he's been slapping a few women around.
Oh, fuck's sake.
I'm going to have to get that fact checked. Maybe we don't put that in.
We'll cut that if it's slander. But Into the Wild, one of my favourite books, you know, he goes into the wild because he's disillusioned with capitalism and he wants to reconnect to nature and reconnect to like what matters. And we fantasize around this like pursuit of purpose. And then really it's like, it all comes back
to died.
People. Yes. He goes on. And do you know what's so funny is that even though he dies at the end of it, I still was like, God, I want to do that.
Yeah.
I want to go into the world. And it's exactly what you said of, it's self-absorbed healing and healing only like, of course, healing yourself helps kind of absorb or get rid of the pain that you have. But the reason that that matters is so you don't go and inflict pain on other people, right?
That is true.
I think it might be.
Well, that's where you'd get... what is it somebody said to me the other day? In Tulum, if you throw a stone, you'll hit a spiritual healer, life coach or something, or yogi.
That's so true. I always say this to my friends, though. I'm like... There will be, and I don't want to generalize, but I am going to generalize because this is what I feel, is that you will often meet men who are doing the work and they're doing the ice baths and maybe they're going to therapy. Mm-hmm. That's great. Love that. But they're doing the ice baths. They're waking up at 5 a.m. They're eating clean. They're eating carnivore. Like they do all of the fads. But then the idea of like sitting down with one of their friends and having an honest conversation is impossible.
Yeah.
And I think that's where I sometimes can get a bit pig-headed in my own point of view, because I'll be like, oh, you know, men are having a really hard time at the moment. They've lost their purpose. They don't really know where they fit into society. And they're lonely. And that's a true thing. Mm-hmm. But then I just think, well, why don't they just fucking go and make communities like women do?
Yeah.
That's how I feel. And it's a confusing question.
Yeah. The things that men need will require more male leaders, or require women to make them for them, I think. And that's the problem. It goes back to the WhatsApp group of who else is going to do it if not me. And I think we're in this real fucking time where men need to step up, and there needs to be more male leaders that just say, you know what, I can help here, and I can be the person that just does it and actions it. Women are so better at actioning things, and men will just sit back and watch their girlfriends and wives make plans for them and become passive in life. And it's embarrassing, really. I'm a victim of myself. I do it myself. My girlfriend's called me out quite a few times and said, organise more date nights. Completely valid. Do you know what I mean? But you just get sort in this passive cycle sometimes. You're just like, oh. And you've got to call yourself out. I think it's important to call yourself out on your own bullshit. And men need to step up and become better leaders for other boys that aren't their own.
And maybe start, like, maybe a Wednesday waffle is a good place to start on that, to be honest.
It's an entry point, I think.
Yeah, it's like low risk. Just give a little update on your life. I also, like, in hearing from people for the pod, there was a lot of really nice stories as well that I think challenged this idea of the real consumerist, capitalist, like, me, view of purpose. It's like this guy was saying, another man, love to hear from them, that my children are my purpose, and I struggle to think what my purpose would be without them. I think before, there would be times when I'd feel so lost and depressed, and I'd struggle to find a reason to carry on. When you have children, it's somewhat of a rebirth, and it's almost like the start of a second life.
Wow.
I would love to hear more stories from men. You know, give that guy a TED talk, because you very rarely hear that, do you?
That honest openness.
We also very rarely hear stories of, like, men talking about how life-changing it is to have a child and what an amazing opportunity it is. As you said, like, you know, if you're not raising boys, it's very hard to have an impact on the next generation.
Yeah, unless you're a sports star or somebody that idolise automatically. And unfortunately, the people that are idolising at the moment are gamers. And nothing against the e-gaming industry, but are these the best people to be looking up to as for our values? And that's a generalisation, of course. I'm sure there'll be some wonderful men within those groups, but it sounds so, like, what would you call it? The reason why the likes of Andrew Tate have popped up, right? It's not that he's the best person for that space. I think he's a fucking knob. And dangerous, wildly dangerous. But yeah. Algorithms feed hate, and they don't feed love as much as they do hate, really, do they? Because it's divisive, and that all that hate fuels comments and rage bait, etc., etc. But imagine if we had somebody like him, or many men like him, that are saying, do you know what, you don't need to make loads of money, but you can still be masculine, you can still want to learn to fight and protect the females in your life and the people in your village if you want to. That's still a great thing to do. It's a great purpose to have as a man, like, protect people you love just because you could and you can.
Yeah.
But you don't need to learn that discipline. There's a guy called Jason Wilson. He's a black guy with a big white beard. And he teaches martial arts to young black kids. And he's got them all crying in the gym. And they're crying, it's so hard, it's so hard. And he's like, yeah, it's hard, but fucking you can do it, blah, blah. And he coaches them through that experience. And I think it's building self-esteem in young boys, because all the things that we spill out onto women, all the people in our lives, is a lack of self-esteem and self-worth. It's like putting women down, abuse, physical, mental. It's all because, like, you have the Johnny last week talking about the battle between your partner earning more than you. But that's okay, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
We need a society where we say, it's okay if my partner is more successful than me. I'll find purpose in another way.
Do you think we've demonised the places that men do feel comfortable to share and where they build self-esteem, like football, like sports? do we shit on them by saying, oh, you go to the football, you talk to your friends because you can't have a coffee?
Yeah, there's probably an element of that, a little bit. Because men don't understand they're going to therapy when they're doing these things, when they're going to play golf and they're chatting about their feelings on the green. Because they're facing away from each other as men do. They can't have a conversation eye to eye. But yeah, I mean, there's self-medication. Probably the 5 pints that go to the football doesn't help in the grand scheme of things and all the stuff that comes with it. But yeah, maybe they've been a bit chastised. Maybe we can just take our foot off them a little bit if that people are having positive conversations from them.
Mm.
Why do you ask that question? Do you feel that?
I think what you said about men, you know, they sit side to side when they're having a conversation. If you've ever had a hard conversation with a dad, they literally will stand side to side. Like the eye contact is just far too much. Yeah. Maybe that's just my dad, but I think it's most dads. You know, it's the holding of the nuts, looking out the window, being like, when I say nuts, I mean peanuts.
Not his ball sack.
Does your dad not do that? Holding the peanuts, like looking out the window and then asking like the hard question. Or, you know, boys and men, it's really easy to get them to open up if you're driving in a car because you're sat side to side. And I think inherently there's a biological reason of, you know, confrontation and competitiveness of why that is. When actually in my degree in psychology, we talked a lot about the importance of movement, like somatic movement, when talking through emotions with men. So things like throwing a ball to each other, naturally that movement helps men open up emotionally. Yeah, it's like something to do. And I think that that is the value of something like football or, you know, sports. But I do think, rightly so, we've called out things like football. There's been a lot of hooliganism in football. And there's been a lot of toxicity and, you know, women haven't been made to feel safe in that space. And that's a massive problem. But I do also think when you take something away or you demonize it, you have to offer another solution.
Yeah. And we've done that a lot. It's hard, isn't it? Because we need to topple these establishments and these patriarchal concepts and these things in order to rebirth something new. And I think we're very much in a phase of, yeah, some things have been toppled to the ground so we can rebuild them. And that's, I think that's okay, because we're never going to get it perfect. I often think about, like, women are outperforming men in every aspect at the moment. There's loads of men that are saying, what about me, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I'm like, you know what? Maybe the boys are just going to have to sit out for a little bit and be on the side, be on the bench.
I think that's the problem of toppling the structures, is that inherently a power shift takes away primarily from men.
Yeah.
Often. And that's, you know, and then there's also a whole, you know, power shift. It's not just men, you know, it's intersectional, it's men, it's race, it's genders. But inevitably, for some people to have more, other people have to have less. Mm-hmm. And I think when that comes to power, and maybe why men feel so like avert to it, it's like, well, if I'm helping out more around the house, that's less time that I don't have.
Yeah.
Like, even on, you know, such a day-to-day simple thing, it's like, oh, these women are saying that I need to be a better partner and I need to be a better dad. Well, I just don't want to, because that looks more shit, just looks shitter.
But if you've had a head start for all your life and then you're now 50-50, then that feels like you're losing, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think people buy into the theory, but I think when you actually say to people, I want you to give up that thing, they're like, me? No, get him to give it up.
I'm paying 6 hours of golf a week.
Yeah, they're like, or a day. Possibly.
Why would I give that up?
Yeah, couldn't possibly.
That's, you guys have got it tough, ain't you? I don't want to state the obvious, but.
Yeah.
It's hard out here.
Not
for us.
Yeah, I mean, not for us. We're in a very privileged situation. But I think to bring this all together is, when people are thinking about their purpose, what would you say to someone if they're like listening to this and they're like, this has been a loopy loopy conversation, but if someone's sitting there thinking, yeah, maybe purpose should be more around people, let's say a man's listening, what do we say to them? What's their first step?
Check him yourself. I think we have to be honest with ourselves about what's going on in our heads and our minds and our bodies. Because you can't action anything if you haven't even been truthful with yourself about what you might feel sad. I think loads of men are like, oh, I don't need therapy, I don't feel those things. You do, you just activate it in a different way and it comes out in the form of anger instead of tears. I think that's what therapy taught me, is just how to cry. And I'm okay with crying now. I think it's pretty cool. Makes me feel a lot better. It's lovely. I get why you guys have been, you know, championing this for a while. So I think check in with yourself. And then I think it sounds so wanky, but like, I think we need to find out what we can do for the people.
Yeah.
With immediate or quick effect.
At recenter of our focus. What can you push outwards?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When times are hard, we all go so insular, don't we? I thought off the back of COVID, when we were locked down and everyone's back in nature, I thought, oh my God, this is perfect. It's going to be lovely. Mm. Everyone's going to look after each other and we're going to be really kind to each other. The exact opposite thing. I live in like a world of naivety and ignorance is bliss, but like the exact opposite thing happened. We all got so self-absorbed. The 1% took away all of the money, as they do, and continue to build their wealth. And then they blame the immigrants and they say, this is why you've got no money. And we say, fucking hell, we need to look after ourselves. Mm. Nobody even says hello to their neighbour anymore.
Yeah.
It's embarrassing.
Yeah.
So bring back community. Bring back the 90s, like This Is England. You know, Woody and Milky and...
Yes.
You know, I was going to say Combo, but no, not him.
No, he was baddie.
Yeah, he was a baddie.
Yeah, I think what you're saying about like male role models is so important. And also like people being willing to firstly have the conversation, but also like you can... hero points of view from like, I think you can still hero points of view from like rich white men. Like, I think there are times when it matters.
Yeah.
Like if someone is a, you know, they're the founder of a company and they actually have loads of power, like let's fucking ask them what they think about these kind of topics and get their point of view. Cause ultimately they're the ones who control so much of the power.
100%. And chastising, yeah, you know what, you called me out on my own bullshit. Maybe I need to bring some of them back in the conversation. We just say, how do you work together? Or because there's going to be some philanthropists as well in those groups, right? They're going to want to give back and get involved in communities.
Well, it's that thing I was saying of like sometimes as a woman it feels like you're shouting to other women being like, help me, help me, we need to change the men. And I think that can happen in every single, you know, in wealth equality, it can also happen in power dynamics within your office. It's like, unless you're, if all the workers are talking about this in the office, but no one's having the conversation with the CEO, then
it's erroneous.
It's, yeah, you have to have those. And also that there are some people who do really great things. And do you know what I think the problem is? That sometimes people do really great things and do really bad things. Like and what? Life is so, well, like people, cancel culture, right?
Yeah.
I wonder if cancel culture has made it harder for, oh, okay. Ooh, I'm going to ask this as the last bit before we start to wrap up. I wonder if cancel culture has made it harder for men to openly go out and try and be the good guy.
What, because they've got demons and things in their past?
Well, everyone has, like, everyone is somebody else's villain. They are. No matter how get nice that, everyone thinks
get
they
that
are.
As a snippet.
Yeah. And it's me. I'm the villain if I you're am. Watching.
It was Rebecca Vardy. Yeah. I mean, that's, yeah.
People, it's the tall poppy syndrome. People do really good stuff and then they get too big for their boots and we love to chop them down.
I guess I'd ask you what is cancelable and what's not, because I've got a theory that I want to bring back stocks.
Stocks? Oh, is it in the public?
Yeah.
Yes.
Tomato throwing.
Mm-hmm.
And the more heinous the crime, I don't mean heinous as in like really, but I mean actually just like low-key heinous.
Okay.
Like one of them is running in at Euston when people run down the causeway, whatever you'd call it, to get on the train first, get you in the stocks.
In the stocks, public shame.
100%.
What are we throwing at them though?
Tomatoes, that's low key.
Yeah.
Like soft tomatoes.
People who play their music out loud on the train.
Harder. Maybe eggs.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Heinous.
I think the role of shame is interesting.
Sorry, I've completely, that was a complete caveat. What were we talking about?
We were talking about cancel culture and putting like whether putting men on pedestals makes a difference. Well, I just think that I think like during COVID, when we think about that time, it seemed like, oh, this was a bright new future that we could create.
Yeah.
And there was lovely people. There was like Rashford.
Yeah.
he was going out and talking about kids'
He was
breakfast.
Doing bits. Ruined his career.
Yeah. Well, that what happened there?
He's just been, I don't know, lost his head since. Well, that's... He's doing a wonderful thing. I'm not poo-pooing Marcus Rashford because he's a great player and he just hasn't been the same since. But I'm not going to be like, he should have focused on the football because that's an embarrassing thing to say.
Yeah, but I think that's an interesting example of like what we talked about. I think it is harder for men to stand up and do good things sometimes.
Yeah. Your man who did the marathons in his garden, Sir Tom,
yeah.
He turned out to be his family rather frauded. And...
Well, it wasn't him, though. It was the family.
I bet he had
you leave
Tom
out of this. He was a good man. He might have been the only last good one. Right, we've really gone round the houses with this. But what I want to end on is a little segment. We'll get back to purpose. I'm just going to ask you one last thing. Do you think the word purpose is useful? And if it's not, what would you replace it with?
I think it's useful. But maybe I'd look at changing it to like service.
Say it with your chest.
Maybe because I'm working on that theory. Because service would be a part of purpose, wouldn't it? It wouldn't be the whole of it. And maybe we can just push service up.
Make it purpose and service.
Yeah.
What is my purpose and service? Or what is my purpose in context of the world, my community?
That's nice.
Yeah.
Service can be a pillar of purpose.
Of purpose.
What do you think? Do you think we should... down with purpose.
The problem that I had is, yeah, I was thinking of purpose versus meaning, and I think the two interact in many ways, and that purpose is your why you do something, and your meaning is how you feel when you do it.
Ooh.
And I wonder if there is an interlink of those which would be more useful. I also would say, anyone who feels like, oh, I have to have my purpose, I actually kind of like mission more.
I like that.
Mission, for me, mission is better because I think a purpose feels like it's supposed to be one thing. I used to be so jealous of my husband. Like, his purpose has always been music.
Mm-hmm.
He's like known, that's all he's ever wanted to do.
Yep.
Music, that's it. And I think people can really think like they sit at home waiting for like the perfect thing to come along and be like, oh, find my purpose. You don't, you make it.
Yep.
You make your purpose. And if you made a mission, you've got more flexibility there. It's like, you don't have to have this. This is not the whole reason you exist.
Mm-hmm.
You exist. You don't need to prove yourself that you exist. You're already here. You don't have to validate that you deserve to breathe air. You deserve to breathe air. You're here. Full stop. And I think that's the problem I have with purpose. It's like, well, if I don't have purpose, I'm purposeless. But actually, I think mission is more impactful of, I have a thing I'm trying to achieve. And that might change in 3 years. It might change in
Important,
5 years.
Because it can change.
And it has to be able to change.
Yeah.
Yeah, no one is, you know, I think very few people are put here if you believe that.
Do you believe you're born to do something? Not like Craig David.
No.
First album. Is it first album? Born to do it?
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
Bit of pop culture trivia. I do not believe that we're born to do anything.
Do you believe in love at first sight?
True love, no.
True love, okay. Like lust at first
sight. I think love is a verb. It's a doing thing. You have to do it.
Nice.
You can't just have it immediately.
Do you believe in you were like soulmates? And if so, are you only allowed one soulmate?
I don't know on that one,
you
know. And that's one I've thought about actually recently. Whether I don't think that there's the one. I think there are the one for periods of your life. And you make a choice whether they're the one. You make a choice together whether they're the one over a long period. There can be the one for your teenage years. And that's absolutely fantastic and serves you. But then, you know, you move on from that one. And then they don't serve you anymore. But I think the only way someone's the one through life is... by doing the work. I think all of it's doing the work. Find your mission, do the work. Feel good in helping others, you've got to do the work.
Yeah. Life's hard work, you've got to put in work, haven't you?
Yeah, I know, we better get to it. But before we do,
we'll
do this last segment. Rapid fire questions. If you're like, yes, love this, say yes. And
okay.
If you don't, say mess. Yes or mess?
Yes or mess.
Working only for the paycheck?
Yes.
Monetizing your passions?
Yes.
Believing you must find your purpose to be happy?
No.
Doing a Cambo frog poison ceremony in Guatemala?
Yes, with supervision.
And because you did that.
I did that.
And it's on your Instagram. People should go and watch it.
Yeah. Thanks.
Pushing outside your comfort zone.
Oh, God, yes.
Love it. This has been a wiggly one. We've wiggled all over the place.
It really has. I'm sorry if that was a complete mess.
No, I've enjoyed it.
I enjoyed the caveats.
This episode, yes or mess?
Oh, big yes.
Oh, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.